Tonight we watched 301 Dalmatians.
No, Stuart, it was 300 Rise of an Empire.
And boy, did it ever.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, with a little bit of a stuffed nose.
All right, well, right off the bat, I just want to say, there's been a lot of controversy.
What is that? Whoa! Hey, buddy, let us settle into this. Settle in a little bit. You don't just dive into a hot bath.
There's no time. Right off the bat, there's been a little controversy.
Is this about Mosember or whatever?
No, it's about, look, Escape, parentheses, the Pina Colada song. Not a Jimmy Buffett song.
No, I told you it wasn't a Jimmy Buffett song.
But here's the thing. In my mind, as far as I'm concerned, all tropical songs become Jimmy Buffett songs over
time. I've got three syllables
Kokomo
for you, dude. Kokomo
is
not a Jimmy Buffett
Kokomo
song.
Kokomo is just 2 years away from becoming a Jimmy Buffett song. Any song that could conceivably be played at a Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville restaurant is a Jimmy Buffett
That's
song.
That's not how that works.
It's the way that Xerox
claims
them. So you're saying Jimmy Buffett has now become Jimmy Buffett is no longer a brand name, but in fact a common word like Q-tip, Xerox,
or Kleenex. Yeah. Aspirin, all of these things.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing you got a lot of letters.
Aspirin is some kind of wife's butt magazine you get. Like it's short for Ass Princess.
Princess. Yep.
Yeah, it's Ass Princess good. With the cess ripped off.
It does sound pretty good.
Now, there was some chatter about
this. A lot of chatter on the Facebook page.
But hey, you know what else there was chatter about before we get into the show?
What's that?
Our Yonkers show was a smashing success.
Yeah.
Let's thank all of our fans who came out to Yonkers from all over the country and other countries to see us perform.
Yeah.
They were really great. It was a great audience.
In the armpit of America, they came to see us.
And guys, I just want to, I know I might get some flack for this, but I also want to thank all those fans who couldn't make it out because they aren't able to make it to Yonkers.
Hey, yeah.
You guys are great too.
Because they're ghosts.
You're all heroes in your own way.
All ghosts.
So let's.
I mean, a lot of people made it a point to come to Yonkers. It seems like the only reason you.
So that concludes.
Come is if you're dead.
That concludes the.
Okay.
That concludes the old business. We covered that. Thanks for coming to Yonkers. It was a great show, and we hope to see you at our January show. Mm-hmm. We're glad you made it to Yonkers. Mm-hmm. Dan explained his bizarre theory that every song is a Jimmy Buffett song.
Once he gets
I guess
his sticky
we didn't
fingers.
Start the fire
every
is a Jimmy Buffett song.
Song is
so
a
like
Jimmy
the
Buffett
Tiki Bird song is that a
the
Jimmy
Tiki
Buffett
Bird song?
Song
is.
I refuse. To live in that world. I refuse to live in that world.
Become a genre is what I'm
Once
saying.
Once he gets his like pineapple juice and gross ketchup stained fingers all over things.
That's for the cheeseburger of paradise.
So this is a podcast where we watch a bad movie and then we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Tonight we watched a sequel.
Oh. A squeakquel, if you will. No, we won't, because it was not a squeakquel. There was no squeaking.
It was called 300: Rise of an Empire.
You probably already know that, though, because when you download the episode
It's on the title.
Talking box or whatever.
Yeah, and then I say it in the introduction, too. Like, it's really not
Yeah, it's never
rise.
A shock.
It's not a big...
This is not when people
it's
find out
for people
for the
who have
time.
Not been paying attention, honestly.
Oh, okay. Like,
so you and Stuart,
tell
basically.
You three times. Shame on you.
What?
So this was a sequel to 300, a movie that Stuart and I both really like, genuinely.
And I thought was, all right.
And I'm not the biggest Zack Snyder fan, but I'll admit, 300.
Visionary director Zack Snyder, you don't
he
like
He
is him?
A visionary, that's true.
Jack Snyder?
Jack Snyder.
Jumping Jack Snyder.
He was Jack, Goldberg, he was Jack Snyder before
and
the
Harry
change.
Wait, before he changed his name to Zack? Now, wait, Snyder's Pretzels. Yeah. Now, he's the son of Tom Snyder.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Zack Snyder, the best thing that Zack Snyder has done is the pre-credit sequence.
No, pre-credit. Whatever, baby Huey.
The pre-credit sequence.
Well, I'm not a huge fan of Zack Snyder, but the Watchmen
like
credit sequence is very good.
I was going to say the pre-credit sequence to the Dawn of the Dead remake.
Oh, okay.
But yeah,
your baby voice lost it near the end there.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, that baby should have been watching.
You get a B+.
It was the zombie baby from Dawn of the Dead.
Wait,
the baby was in the opening?
No, that Dan was doing the voice.
Oh, okay.
Not I mean, every baby is in an opening at some point. It's how you get them out of there. You show me a baby, I'll show you one who's been through an opening.
It's
a C-section still an
for
opening.
The baby.
Still an opening.
It's really an exit for the baby. It's not.
It opens, doesn't it?
Yes, it does open.
Because it's closed. That's how a baby gets out of it. Because you know what about exits? They don't open.
You're right. I'm going to just go.
Please do.
Walk away. Walking. Gone. Dan gone.
Okay,
chain rattle, door closed.
Yeah, boogans, et cetera, thunder sound. So 300, it's a stupid movie, but I find it pretty fun. It is high operatic cornball.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a movie made out of heavy metal covers just tossed together. And
for the most part, the people acting in it understand this and are way over the top.
They're at the right pitch of goofy, over the top spectacle. Whereas, just spoiler alert, 300 Rise of an Empire, instead of having Gerard Butler in what's still his best role by far, right? Better than Bad Soccer Dad?
Soccer Dad, Bad Dad. Yeah.
The Ugly Truth. Come on.
Yeah, so he's been bad in everything except 300. He is replaced here with some guy whose name I don't even know, who is...
From Strike Back.
The guy from Strike Back.
Is he the guy in Strike Back who catches the nuclear weapon like a football?
Well, I don't know what a nuclear weapon is.
It's a nuclear weapon.
I've heard about a nuclear weapon. Pedantic. I've never seen it.
What was his name in this? Mystolodonies?
No, he's Themistocles, which is a real person.
Themistocles.
Now, Themistocles. Themistocles, the old blues song.
Oh, Themistocles.
Yeah. Themistocles. Themistocles. They sure got me. Themistocles.
Well,
I'm old Jack Sparta, Mississippi Delta blues man who sings about ancient Greece.
I played down at the Hot Gates.
Sing a little bit of the Thermopylae blues. down. Just 300 of us here. And Xerxes coming round. Oh, there's 300 of us here. And Xerxes coming round.
You make a good point. Which
better
is that.
Tell my woman. There's some bad stuff to be found. That's every blues song.
You make a good point.
They all sound the
blues
same.
Songs are terrible.
The blues is bad.
You're bad for liking it if you enjoy it.
Wow, that's
you're
a little
wrong.
Far. It's a little too far.
Yeah, you're a bad person.
Because out of the blues came something great. Zydeco. We all love Zydeco with its accordions and its whatever it does, whatever else it does.
You know, and the knuckles, you play your knuckles.
Yeah, Sonic and Knuckles, classic Zydeco duo.
And Tails.
Tails broke up with the group, yeah.
Tails
split
died.
Off.
Tails died. Go to DeviantArt. There's probably a shiloh of pictures of it.
Of dead Tails. Oh,
and
Sonic was weeping. Sonic's all in black veil, yeah.
Sure.
Because he was Tails' wife. Anyway, let's talk about it. So this is a sequel to 300, but it happens both before and concurrently and after 300. So it's like The Godfather Part 2 of 300 movies, where it's bouncing around in time.
Yeah.
We open, okay.
It's a parallel sequel.
In the last movie, it was the Battle of Thermopylae, 300 Spartans, and about a ton of other Greek guys, but let's not talk about them, versus the army of Xerxes, the Persian emperor, who is a monster man, and he's got an army
squad.
Of monster people.
He does have a monster
he does have
squad.
A monster squad. And here's one of the things I love about 300, the first movie. Okay, it is bonkers, crazy eight myth stuff. They are fighting an army of monsters. Xerxes is like 18 feet tall and talks in this like low core of the earth voice. Like everything about it is totally ridiculous. A guy, a rhinoceros is charging at them, and a guy throws his spear, and it's timed just right so that the dead rhinoceros slides right up to them, but not far enough to touch them. Like
now,
not enough
love,
to like get dust on his sandals.
Yeah.
Do you love the homophobia of the original 300?
I don't, and I'll tell you
they're
why.
They're kind of gay monsters. So
well, yes, there is well, I don't know if it's gay so much as sexually decadent.
Yeah,
because it's implied they're having that weird like orgy of amputees and scarred women and things like that. I mean, let's get one thing straight. These are a racist bunch of movies.
Yeah, it's a xenophobic.
These are movies about
series.
About white English accented Greeks with relatively light hair versus monsters versus Persian monsters
or attacking the homeland.
But here's the thing: at its heart, It is about a bunch of He-Men.
It's about love.
It's the closest we're going to get to it. No.
It's a tale. It's hard.
Tale
it's
is
a
old
tale
as,
of a boy and his dog.
Tale as old as time. Well, a couple thousand years old. It's about. It's the closest you're going to get to a He-Man movie. It's these buff guys fighting monster men.
Who would be Ram Man then?
Who's Orko?
Orko, unfortunately, is not in it. And as we said, we're watching this movie. It could have used a kind of wisecracking wizard.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem with 300 Rise of an Empire. They cut out most of the monsters, and I think they tried to tack more towards real history to a point, but then they did it in a stupid way. So let's talk about what's going on. The movie opens with Lena Headey's character, Queen Gorgo of Sparta, and I wish she was Gorgo the British Godzilla, yeah. Who you may remember from the movie Gorgo.
No, I don't.
Well, it was the British Gorgo. Knockoff of Godzilla.
Okay.
And he's basically Godzilla, but he's got fins for ears. There's baby Gorgo and there's mama Gorgo. But we don't need to get into that. Then there's Gorgonzola, which is, of course, is a Greek cheese that fought the Persians.
Okay.
So she's like, hey, you guys remember all that King Leonidas and all his men died? Let me give you some backstory. It seems 10 years ago we had the Battle of Marathon, and this guy Themistocles killed King Darius of Persia. But he should have killed King Darius' son Xerxes because his eyes had the stink of fate about them,
yep.
Or whatever it is they say. Now, historically,
common phrase: his eyes had the stink of fate.
But at this point in this opening, I guess monologue, and we get a battle sequence, and this is not terrible. It's shot okay. I mean,
it's a 300 style dumb battle sequence with lots of slow-mo and blood flying everywhere. It was like fake CGI and blood, and the colors were all way overblown
it's
and everything.
Like you said, it's Mortal Kombat blood.
Yeah. The blood in this gets seemingly faker and faker as it goes on, and there are parts where it does
and
feel
I don't
like
know
you're
if that's,
watching
if that's
Mortal
because
Kombat.
Of the 3D. Like, they wanted to make it shinier so it would pick up the 3D better.
Could be.
I don't know
someone
how that
mentioned
shit works.
On the Facebook page about Dracula 3D, the one we watched last episode, that it was lit so brightly to compensate for the light you lose when you do it in 3D.
Which made sense,
Which
and I'm surprised
sense.
We didn't think about it, although
but
it still looked like shit.
Here, it's like they need more stuff to throw at you because it's 3D. And much like the Hercules movie we watched, in ancient times, apparently, there was always like pollen and cinders and feather and shit just flying around in the air all the time.
Yeah, and stuff that gives you a sense of depth.
Like,
just happens to be in the air.
But also, like, ancient people must have had terrible lungs. Like, they're just breathing in crap all the time. Apparently, industrialization was the best thing that ever happened when it came to clean air.
And pretty much
ancient
all of
air was
Greece
dirty.
Is all of Greece that we see is like black lava rocks.
Yeah. It's
like,
just,
why does Persia want it so bad,
it just
dude?
Blasted cliffs. Yeah. Against an
because
unrelenting,
it's a crucible
unsympathetic
for forging warriors.
I guess so. But anyway, she tells the tale still about how Xerxes now became emperor, and he took on Darius's top commander, Artemisia.
Darius
now,
Argento's top commander.
Thank God not.
Yeah. So Artemisia, Eva Green's character, it's your classic story in these movies. She is a little girl who was sold into slavery, repeatedly raped, left for dead, picked up by a Persian general, and trained to be the world's greatest badass warrior queen. Mm-hmm. She's basically like Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy, or like, Xena, or...
Or Mara Jade.
Mara Jade from the Star Wars
Blood
Extended
Rain,
Universe.
I don't know what you're...
Mara Jade?
Come on, Mara Jade. She married Luke Skywalker eventually.
What?
She's the most popular addition to the Star Wars canon made by Timothy Zahn.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Call
Star
Timothy
Wars
Zahn
canon.
Real quick.
Hello. Timothy Zahn? Oh, no, sorry. It's your brother Steve. Steve Zahn. Tell your brother Timothy who wrote the Star Wars books. Dan doesn't know what he's talking about. You're going to get an angry letter from Steve Zahn.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the Star Wars canon consists of the Star Wars movies.
No, the Star Wars canon is a canon that shoots Star Wars DVDs at people.
Okay.
Very ineffective in a siege situation, but Leonardo da Vinci invented it.
And people are really disappointed when they get episode one.
It's terrible for morale. It's like throwing the heads of your enemies at them.
Yeah. So anyway, Artemisia is the, let's just say it, the best character in the whole movie.
She's great.
The only interesting character. And Eva Green has that type of performance you were talking about.
She's got it.
She has got it. And by it is scenery chewing ham boneness.
Yeah.
Just total ham.
And the willingness to have a fight / sex scene topless.
Yeah.
Both of those things.
Totally.
Make her pop off the screen.
Because it's 3D boobs? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Make it her. Sergei Popov.
Something, there's just something ineffable about her. It could be the fact that she's fighting topless.
Could be.
Who knows?
But anyway,
science will tell us.
And now this is sure. this sequence is the best part of the movie, as far as I'm concerned. It tells the backstory of Artemisia goading Xerxes into going through a mystical rite in the cave of a hermit in the desert, where he walks into a pool of magic gold liquid and walks out as the 18-foot-tall, chain-covered, totally hairless, androgynous monster king that we know from the first movie.
And the hermit says, "Gold! You're taking my gold! It's all over your body! Give me back my gold!
There's gold in them there, Xerxes!
Why am I a hermit if I have all the gold?
I'm rich! Rich, I tells you! Rich! It's ancient Persia!
What a great character.
Yeah, the Persian gold prospecting yep. hermit.
I want to see that. 303 hermit. A hermit's tale.
A hermit's tale. So is it the tale of how he became a hermit, or is it how he stops becoming a hermit? Or is it just him in his cave just eating his own scabs for sustenance?
Telling stories.
Him in his cave occasionally shooting his shotgun above the heads of people who come close to his cave.
Stay away from a cave! Xerxes!
A traveler shows up, and the hermit delights him with erotic adventures and tales.
Yeah. 1,001 of them.
What are you talking about?
In the Red Hermit Diaries.
Dear Hermit. Nobody's reading it aloud. Dear Hermit, I have a story to tell you.
Well, I don't know how this guy got my address, but I'll read it.
I live in a cave. I guess I'll read it in a state of undress.
While touching myself. No one can see me. I'm a hermit.
I'm a hermit. Get those cameras out of here. Showtime.
Call us Showtime.
Zalman Hobo King's The Red Hermit Diaries. Okay, so.
Not even Zalman God King, I think, would be
no,
more
no.
appropriate.
Xerxes is the God King in this one. So basically, at that point, the movie then shifts and it becomes concurrent with the Battle of Thermopylae.
Yep.
Themistocles is fighting a bunch of battles. After Marathon, when he killed Darius, he fights battles against Xerxes. They fight the Battle of Artemisium, which is this big naval battle. They fight the Battle of Salamis later on.
Yep.
I don't think that was a...
The Battle of Salamis. They're hitting each other with big salamis. And it's basically...
Oh, yeah. I remember that from an old Three Stooges short. Yeah.
And at this point, it just...
ancient Greece.
It kind of becomes like a Classics Illustrated shitty history of the Persian Wars. Because mm-hmm. it's just battle after battle, speech after speech. The characters are cardboard as all get out. Occasionally, Eva Green will show up and liven things up. But, like, mm-hmm. there aren't even any monster men for most of it. Mm-hmm. Like, are they? It's like the last half hour, they're like, oh, yeah, were there monsters in this thing?
You're saying that if... TNT's Monster Vision was interested in this movie, they would have to pass it over.
Yeah, entirely. Well, I mean, Monster Vision showed a lot of movies without monsters in them.
What? They've gone way off message.
Uh-oh, you better talk to Joe Bob Briggs. This wasn't in your remit, Joe Bob.
Yep, just send it to his hermit's cave.
Yeah. Oh,
just
JBB.
Hermit Joe Bob Briggs. Today we've got Lonely Foo, Solitary Foo, Talking to Nobody Foo, No Boobs. Just Hermit Joe Bob is giving the ratings for that day's nothing.
Yeah, he's telling it to the picked over skull of a cow that he has in his cave.
Artemisia and Themistocles, because this is a movie, they have a sort of romantic savage rivalry, which mm-hmm. comes to a head when they come to a head and have sex with each other while fighting. She offers to have him join her because he's a brilliant general who's been outwitting her, and she is a brilliant generaless who is a hellcat in the sack. He says no.
Yeah, and they have a little rough sex, which does not get consummated because he
denies the sex
her.
Is the consummation, right?
Yeah, but I mean, look, there's no, I mean, clearly does the sex does not continue to either of their
completion.
No, oh, yeah, like, sure. Well, we don't know that about him.
I guess that's
as soon
true.
As he pulled out, he might have been like,
anybody got a Band-Aid?
We see him clutching
a Band-Aid.
Yeah, how do you guys do
your urethra? Like,
I don't like where this is going.
Stop it from coming out. I don't understand. Like,
just staunch the flow.
He's never had sex before, so he's like, I've got a leak. Ah, my soul essence is leaking out.
I'm bleeding white, gooey blood.
Okay, stop. Stop, please. Stop right there. Please stop. But we do see him clutching a cape to his crotch, so maybe he's just kind of trying to mop up.
Yeah.
There's like more and more fighting, and at a certain point we're like, so did they forget that Lena Headey was telling this story? Mm-hmm. Because then we get to the Battle of Salamis, where they're fighting on a bunch of ships, and it just becomes a video game. You are just behind a CGI Themistocles on a horse as he rides around across ships, slashing guys and going through fire. Mm-hmm. And then he's having a...
complete with like shots of zooming in on Artemisia across the sea, and then cutting back to him, and then he decides to go on a different route. It's garbage.
It looks like you're watching someone play Shenmue. Remember that game?
Yeah.
Was that Dreamcast? That was for it. Yeah. Anyway,
remember Mario Kart, guys? Remember that one?
Yeah. This was a lot like Mario Kart.
Yeah, because he kept throwing shells at people. Yeah,
shells. There's bananas. Banana peels?
Oh, tons of banana peels, Dan.
All right.
Is Dan okay?
Just trying to relate to
I think
you
he's
guys.
Having a stroke. Trying to relate to us, to the young people.
Yeah.
Banana peels.
Joust? You guys remember Joust?
I don't like where this... Again, this is just old video games now. Okay, so
there's a big battle.
There's a big battle, and they're fighting, and then you hear Lena Headey. You haven't heard her narration. Oh, there's also a part in the middle where one of the characters starts telling Themistocles Artemisia's backstory. So it's a nice nested flashback where you're like, all right, so what is going on here? Now, after this point...
you feel like you need to diagram this movie a little
off bit. Camera... The Battle of Thermopylae happened. Now this is after the Battle of Thermopylae. Artemisia and Themistocles have met up for their final duel, and they got swords to each other's necks, and you hear Lena Headey, a wind rustled, caressed her hair like a lover's hand, blah, blah, blah. And you see that Lena Headey is standing on an approaching ship with a bunch of Spartan soldiers, because she's the queen of Sparta and whatever. And it's like, wait, so the whole movie was her telling them a story as they got to this battle, but she was narrating the battle that was happening that they hadn't gotten to yet? And then they end.
Seems like it, dude.
Artemisia forces Themistocles' hand. He kills her after offering to let her go. And the Spartans.
Much to our groans of consternation.
Yeah, because she's the best character. And then the Spartans come and attack everybody. And that's the end. And Western civilization is saved from the evil monster Persians. But here's the thing. I would have liked this movie more if Artemisia had killed Themistocles.
Oh, totally.
Killed everybody else. Then gotten into a spaceship and like had a bunch of space adventures.
Yeah, I mean, as I said while we were watching it, you could easily do a crossover between 300 and Stargate, and it wouldn't be weird. It would look totally normal.
Because they both have the same villain, too.
Yeah. Because Xerxes looks like a Gua'uld is what they're now, called, Dan.
Now I really really want to see this movie, though, where like there's this like awesome assassin Persian princess.
And I would feel
like
she's actually Greek. She just works for the Persians.
Oh.
Yeah, no, but she's this awesome assassin.
And if it was a crossover with Stargate, she could have sex with James Spader. It would be really rough and creepy.
In a car crash.
Yeah.
One of these Stargate 300 crash crossovers.
It's called a Star Crash.
And then she becomes...
No, Star Crash is a different movie.
Whoa, that doesn't happen in Star Crash.
You'll be very disappointed.
And then she's James Spader's secretary, and he spanks her when she gets the...
Don't be creepy.
What? I'm doing other. Oh, but I
don't be
we
creepy. And then he'll
Artemisia's tough.
And then
she
he'll blacklist
same,
everybody. He'll blacklist everyone.
Yeah,
he'll
wear a fedora around.
She's tough.
And be puffy on the cover of magazines.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. This is a very boring movie for a lot of it, but it's got this one performance in it that's really exciting.
Yep.
You wonder, like, why didn't they make this just about her? Why did they have to make the Greeks the heroes? Why couldn't they have made her the hero? I mean, she loses in the end, but...
But I mean, like, that's just, like, you write a movie, and you don't necessarily know what's going to go on with the casting. Like, the thing is, like, they got lucky with the casting of her and apparently did not know how to cast anyone else.
I guess, but her character is even written more interestingly than the other ones. Like, instead, it's the old villain has more fun thing. Like, the hero gives a lot of speeches about, we need to be free men, democracy... The United Greece to have freedom and liberty, but he never really seems to believe any of it. He's just kind of like yelling things at his men to get them to fight all oiled up and shirtless. Meanwhile, she's written in a way that it's like, yeah, okay, she has a motivation. Like, she was thrown away by the Greeks. Now she wants to get revenge, but also she has a lust for power and she likes to use people.
And she had the and she, in a way, rose Xerxes to power. And she even has the opportunity to like go against his wishes, which is cool. Like she is a more interesting character.
Everything about her is more interesting than this guy who is just battle after battle, speech after speech. But we don't give a shit about him. You know, mm-hmm. he has nothing to interest us other than in theory he's a hero.
No, I'm totally with you. And telling it from her perspective would tie it closer to the original 300 with the idea of the hero dies at the end.
Yeah.
But it felt so much like when you take the 300 story and you change – well, you're not taking the exact story, but when you're taking that era of time and then you just change all the things that would conveniently make a more positive movie, like – instead of having them sacrifice their lives, you know, for no appreciable effect, instead they have the good guys winning at the end of the day.
I mean, the Greeks did win that battle in real life.
No, I know, but and there's even like a boss fight at the end.
Yeah, which, well, that's
300 never had that moment of like
it's not like
release. I guess
Xerxes and Gerard Butler didn't have like a hand to hand combat scene.
Which
aside from that, they
Gerard
only met
Butler
once.
Would have been fucked because Xerxes has that giant magic axe that he's carrying in this movie
that he just cuts people's heads off with.
Where did he get a horse big enough to carry him around? Because he's so huge.
Well, he must have bred it. It's like a destroyer, or, you know, some kind of dreadnought horse or something.
Sure.
One of those horses that they used to breed in medieval times that were strong enough to carry a man in armor, but they were so expensive you never actually rode them into battle.
Was that the medieval times in New Jersey or?
Yeah, the medieval times in Bayonne, yeah. But here's the thing. They took a movie that was goofy as all get out.
Yes.
Removed the stuff that made it fun and goofy.
Most of the
except
stuff
for
that
a little
made it
bit,
fun and
except
goofy.
For a little bit. And then took it for granted that the audience was just along for the ride. There was a lot of like goodwill fumes from 300 that this movie used up.
Yeah, I hate to say that like basing the original 300 on Frank Miller's graphic novel in some ways was a benefit because they managed to throw in a ton of extra shit like the weird Temple of the Oracles and all that other weird stuff that at least added flavor and character like hermit caves.
But also,
well, that's the best part of it is in the beginning, they have the hermit cave and stuff. But it felt like while we watched the movie, I said, this feels like we're watching if ancient Greeks had movies and they made a movie about this. This is the movie they would make. Heroic bare-chested Greeks fighting monster men who use evil magic. And then the movie like forgot about all that stuff. What were you going
to
say, Dan?
I said this while we were watching the movie, but also too, I feel like this movie actually suffered from not being an adaptation of a comic in that the first 300 kind of took advantage of its fakeness in the backdrops to really mirror the panels of a comic strip. Like it had a certain two-dimensional quality, like, and all the action progressed along a two-dimensional line that made it very easy to follow. Whereas this movie had the fakeness of the CGI backgrounds, but it was untethered by that kind of like comic panel look.
That's what you meant when you were saying it's too 3D.
Yeah, it's like
that
it's
third
weirdly
dimension was not time, by the way.
No.
Yeah, I mean, like it. When I say it's too 3D, it doesn't mean it makes it look more realistic. I just mean that the stylization is worse.
Yeah,
it's not as clear. You know?
I mean, it also doesn't help that like the visuals were really murky and dark, and somebody would turn from a human to a CGI figure back to a human within a couple seconds, and the camera's always spinning around. Ah, you know these young kids with their movies with the cameras moving around and the people jumping all over and
the
wushu and whatnot.
Kind of like that last Hercules movie we watched that where they seem to just hit the bullet time button at random points.
Yeah,
like you're watching your friend play Max Payne, and you're like, dude, you're doing it totally wrong.
But I really wanted to like this movie because I liked the first one, and I had heard that Eva Green had a nude sex scene in it. So I said, okay, sure, I'm on board. Maybe a bunch of monsters cut people's heads off.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, the monsters were missing.
Yeah, we're there already, but let's do final judgments. Is this a good, bad movie, a bad, bad movie, or a movie you kind of liked? I say it's a bad, bad movie. I was bored by it almost more than – like this is in the – like. 80th or 90th percentile of flop house movies I was bored by.
I don't know what that number means.
Yeah.
you know.
Do you have a calculator? Where's the?
Yeah, there's a motion. Is more bored or less bored?
I've been running the numbers. I had Nate Silver over in here. No, Mordor. This is one of the
Mordor?
Yeah, Mordor. Yeah,
Mordor.
Mordor.
It looks like
Mordor. I
want to
take this movie and throw it from the Discworld books. In Mordor, because that's the only way we can rescue the world from the evil of this film.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, you better be ready to have Gollum bite your finger off, because I'm not ready to do
it. Why don't they just have the eagles drop it off for us?
Yeah, there's a lot of questions in those Lord of the Rings stories. Why doesn't the old one, why don't they just hand the ring to Tom Bombadil and let him lose it in his couch somewhere? No one will ever find it in his magic hermit cabin.
Because that's not what he's for, dude. He's too busy banging Goldberry and hanging out with Fatty Lumpkin.
My favorite part of the books is when they're like, why don't we just give the ring to Tom Bombadil? He's like, he'll just forget it somewhere. Like, that Tolkien introduced this godlike character, and then he had to realize, like, I guess I'll make him, like, a real doof so that they can't trust him. Because otherwise he solves every problem in the whole thing.
It's a bad, bad movie.
It was really boring and disappointing. Yeah. And I have to say that, like, there's a good movie, like, there's a good straightforward history movie to be made about the Persian Wars, and there's a good over-the-top crazy movie, and this was neither of them. And it just makes me wonder, when they finally make the movie about the Battle of Cannae that I want them to make so badly, how is it going to be? Good or bad? Hollywood, the choice is yours.
You want that to be over-the-top and crazy monster.
I mean, either way, either over-the-top, or I'd love to have a realistic version of it, because that battle
was horrendous. I would love to see, like, a super over-the-top, like, Waterloo with, like, monster French guys and Napoleon on a dragon.
Napoleon is 12 feet tall and breathes fire.
And a grim, nonplussed Wellington driving a fucking steam carriage or something.
Called like Waterloo 2.0.
Awesome.
I mean, that's the other thing, though, is once things are a certain amount of time in the past, it's okay to just make stuff up. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a bunch of movie ideas that my old writing partner Brock and I used to have that were like just set in the idea of the past. Like, as long as it was a long time ago, you could throw it in. And I feel like there's movies that could do that type of thing that don't.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on to letters, we should do some plugs.
Okay.
Or a plug. I don't know whether there's more things to plug than this one thing, but
who cares?
The one thing that we should plug is we've got another live show coming up, not right away, but in January.
But it's going to sell out, so buy your tickets.
And it's at the Bell House in Brooklyn. It's the opening night of PodFest 2015 here in New York City.
It's January 9th
at
10 p.m.
Yeah, the doors open at 9:30, shows at 10. Cost is $10 if you buy ahead of time, $12 at the door.
Buy it ahead of time, save $2. Then give that money to us.
Put it in our tip cups.
In our tin cups?
In our
DVD copy of Tin Cup?
Yep. That's about all there is.
Well, that was enthusiastic.
We're also going to plug something for comic book fans out there.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you plug that?
You should hustle down to your local comic book retailer, bang on the counter, and say, "Shopkeep, I would like to pre-order a copy of the Flash Gordon Holiday Special from Dynamite Comics."
Now, why would they want to do that?
Because it features three stories for the price of one, and each story is written by...
Three stories. There's three of us. Uh-oh. Seems like a weird coincidence.
The thing, Dan. We each wrote a story. Each focusing on a different holiday. So it's going to be, it's really great. It's a special one-shot issue. You don't need to have read anything beforehand, but you should, because
the Flash Gordon series
really
is
great.
Really good. Yeah.
And if you do not have a local comic book shop, which is sad, I feel bad for you. You should instead go onto the internet, which is everywhere. And
even in your house.
Yep. Even in that
it's
pocket
watching
computer.
You right now.
Open your mouth. That's internet in there.
And go on and pre-order it from the Dynamite website.
So that's the Flash Gordon Holiday Special, mm-hmm. #1. And get tickets now for the January 9th show, The Flophouse Live.
Oh,
New York City PodFest 2015 at the Bell House in Brooklyn, New York, Earth.
You going to plug your Twitter account?
I just remembered there's another thing I should mention. I had a brief guest spot on Wham Bam Pow, one of our fellow Max Fun Network shows. Talking about something that I've talked about many times
Butts.
On this show, Return of the Living Dead. So
Merkins, then, I guess.
So you've probably heard me talk about it already if you're a fan of this show. But if you want to know what it sounds like when I'm talking, when I'm not being interrupted by Elliot and Stu, check out Wham Bam Pow.
That was a little pointed.
Sounds great. Do you have anything else to plug, Elliot?
I plugged that book that I had an essay in last episode. Never Can Say Goodbye. I have an essay in that.
Plug up your fucking pie hole.
Wow.
But since plug Slate that thing. Even plugged wow. it for you, huh?
Yeah, and Slate ran an excerpt.
Yeah.
So, Dan, how did you feel about 300 Rise of an Empire?
I already said I didn't like it.
Oh, well, was it a scarily spookanying or snorkily stupefying, or was it a giddily good groak?
Giddily good groak?
That's the classification.
Sure.
We're in,
so he's got you. Is it what kind of a groke is it?
For this theme month,
is it November a Fazzleberry?
November.
No, it's
no theme.
Noidvember. The year we this is the month we celebrate the Noid.
Okay, so
or rather the avoidance of him.
Hide those fucking pizzas.
He ruins them.
Excuse me, I am a hunter of pizzas.
The pizza will hide. The hawk looks where the hawk would hide. He looks in the attic, he looks in the belfry. I look where the pizza would hide, in the basement, in the cellar.
In the wooden pizza oven.
I mean, American.
I would not call myself a pizza hunter.
We've done a lot. We've done a very good job of avoiding the Noid over the past decade or 15 years. Or 20
well, you
got
to thank the social, the national security state for that.
Yeah.
Enjoy your surveillance, dude. If it's worth being Noid free to have all your emails read by the NSA, have a fucking drone watching you every day, brushing your teeth through the bathroom window. Yeah. Enjoy your pizza, dude.
Keywords: pepperoni, pizza.
It comes in 30 minutes or less, where your pizza is not free, just like you.
Look, actually, guys, look.
Wow, that was a stretch, but I liked it.
Yeah, I know. That's just like it's just like George Orwell said in 1984: "Big Brother is feeding you pizza. 2 + 2 = Noid."
Yeah.
Hey, man.
And then they put your face in a cage where Noids eat it off.
Just ruin it.
Yeah.
Look.
Hey, wake up, pizzas.
She pizzas.
Wait, she pizza?
She pizza. She, that's when pizza's cousin got a transfusion from him and became she pizza.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
It's got lamb on it.
It's time for Occupy Pizza.
Sounds good. So
does the Noid even exist? Has anyone ever seen this Noid? And yet, I've got to take my pizza off when I go to the airport?
Yeah. It's a false flag.
Yeah.
Noid. So it's time to read a few letters from you, the listeners, who write letters to us, the hosts.
Seems like a weirdly stilted introduction, as if you're expecting something.
No, I'm just gonna go right in, dive right in. So this first letter is from Brian, last name withheld.
Brian wrote us a letter. Letter number one's from Brian today. Hey, Brian, quit frying in your hate. For guys who don't read your letters, because Dan's gonna, right now, read the letter. And how? It's your letter, Brian. Hey, stop crying. Brian, this day's for you.
Are we at the chorus yet?
Letter number one. Maybe it'll be fun.
It's
maybe it'll be done soon. But let's make it last forever. This letter, together. Those are three words that don't really rhyme, but I pretended they did for Brian. P.S. Dan.
Brian was filmed in front of a live studio audience. So this letter goes
whatever
like
happened to predictability?
Oh, boy.
The milkman, the letters page. Brian's thing
okay.
for us.
He goes,
everywhere you read,
he writes,
there's a letter.
I
Full
read,
House.
Never met Brian before.
Who cares?
Doo-doo. Boom, 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 boom.
Letter from Brian. Night court. Night court. It's night court.
Boom, 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 boom. So,
Brian's letter. Do, 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 do. Brian's letter.
Okay.
So the podcast just sang a bunch of old TV themes.
Thank you for writing the letter.
Unsubscribe.
Sitting at your computer and write a letter. Your fandom's true. You're a pal and you wrote a letter. And if you sent a letter, invited everyone you knew,
what would
you
we
would
do,
see your
baby,
letter would be for us.
Without letters, what would we do?
Brian's letter reads.
Well, there's a time for Brian and a time
I
for
like when
letters.
You guys get right to the point. And don't bullshit around with silly songs.
So this letter goes like this.
Show me that letter again.
Show me that letter.
Don't waste another nice minute on this song bit.
Okay, so it goes like this. I recently acquired a role as a monster in a major motion picture.
Whoa, I wanted to hear about that. Why did you wait so long?
I hope it's the next 300 movie.
300 Rise of Monsters.
I'm concerned slash excited. It may eventually
it's called 300. A Hermit's Tale, Greeks versus Draculas.
I'm concerned slash excited that it may eventually get viewed for the show. I don't want to specify anything about the movie, but I know that I personally have no acting chops. Despite me being 6'7" and 170 pounds, it is unfortunately not a movie about Slender Man. Anyway, hopefully I'll have a reason to contact you guys once the movie comes out. And you make fun of the stupid monster in it. Brian, last name withheld. Now, come on.
I want to know what the movie is.
Be more confident
now.
About yourself. The stupid monster in it. That's you. That's you, man.
Right?
Be happier.
Yeah.
No, he might be playing a stupid monster.
Yeah. No, like a... Like what?
Like I mean, most monsters aren't monster. Super smart.
Like a Frankenstein's monster?
I'm a monster.
Dar, the Beastmaster. Mark Singer, everybody.
like a King Kong? Like a big ape.
King Kong's pretty smart for a monster.
Yeah, but before
I mean, more like
smart.
Gilman. Gilman is dumb as a bag of rocks.
Yeah, yep. All right.
Don't get me started on the Metaluna mutant. He's got a big brain, but he's stupid as hammers.
But this guy is more than...
Hammerman, though. Super smart.
And not a monster. He's a heroic rapper with magic shoes.
This guy's taller than... 6.5 feet. And
okay.
He
yes.
He weighs less than I do.
Yeah, he's real skinny.
So let's.
He must
I mean,
be playing like a
I'm
pumpkin head or a scarecrow
kind of
man or something.
He's
like a Skeletor.
Essaying.
Yeah, I mean,
he's writing an essay.
Yeah, maybe he's like a ant or something.
He's like a real monster. Right?
Yeah, an ant or an ant or
real
a
spindly monster.
Yeah, like an insect monster, pumpkin head, as Elliot said.
Yeah, some kind of spindly monster.
I know. Do you look
like
a pumpkin head, Brian?
What?
A daddy long legs monster?
Yeah, sure.
Well,
yeah.
That's not a spider. That's an insect.
Yeah. No, I didn't say he was a spider.
Yeah, but the implication was clear.
I don't think.
And I was pretty offended by it.
Sorry, guys.
It's not Danny long
don't
legs.
Don't apologize to me. Apologize to the daddy long legs and his children. They lost their mommy long legs in an accident. He's a single dad, just like on Full House. Whatever happened to predictability? The milkman, the paperboy, the evening TV.
What a weird song.
It doesn't make sense. It's just,
what they're really angry about.
Why don't
I
they just throw a fucking Beach Boys song in front of that
well, like,
show?
Oh, I hope that'd be terrible.
Probably Kokomo.
My favorite, though, is still the Perfect Strangers song, which is so grandiose for that show. Standing tall on the wings of my dreams, which is a lot for a show about a goofy guy with a funny accent to live up to.
Yeah. All right. Well,
and that it's got that plaintive harmonica at the end. Oh, it really touches your heart.
As they run up to the Cubs stadium, right?
Yeah.
Wrigley Field.
Yeah, Wrigley Field.
So.
Wrigglesley Field. Founded by Barnabas
Field.
Wrigglesby.
This next letter.
Okay.
Talk slower.
Stretch it.
Like this.
Oh.
It's from Finn, last name withheld, who writes, last night I had a dream in which
it's
I was
a shark man.
I had a dream in which I was visiting an elderly relative. Dan, Stewart, and Elliot were hanging out in her kitchen. Dan explained that the three of you had started a private detective / mercenary business together called NYUM. Which stands for Not Your Usual Mayhem.
It's pretty good. It's pretty fantastic.
The goal
and it's and you say it yum because it's delicious.
The goal, in Stewart's words, was to make some money, kick some ass, and maybe get to ride in a helicopter. Dan explained that things were, quote, off to a shit slow start, and the current gig was organizing my aunt's utensil drawer.
I mean, it seems like a small job for mercenaries.
New York utensil manipulators. That could be our name, too.
Other yum jobs had included gutter repair and walking someone's dog. Stuart and I talked about...
I don't
about,
know if we really count as mercenaries.
Exactly.
We're more handymen.
Stuart and I talked about Gene Wolfe novels, and it was only after I woke up that I realized Elliot had been wearing a flak jacket and aviator shades the entire time. He looked pretty cool.
Thank you.
That's from Finn, last name withheld.
Yeah, you'd be our, you'd be like, we'd call you Specs or something. Yeah.
Well,
like, or Brains or something.
I'd be Brains, but straight, or like Nerdabottom or something.
But strangely,
I'm the only one of us who's been in like a real military combat situation, which is weird.
You don't know anything about me, dude.
I mean, you didn't shoot anybody.
No, I did not shoot anybody. I shot a lot of bullets, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
At targets.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very worried I'd lose control of the gun.
Were bears.
Those targets.
Yeah.
Were Target superstores.
Afghani base. Oh, you know that guy who was shooting up all those Target superstores? Shh.
Wink.
You're right, Stuart. I don't know anything about you because that part of your record has been redacted.
Exposed
on order of the president.
Sure. Okay, so this next letter is
all
really
I know
long.
Is you have that plaque that says from a grateful universe.
Exactly. Yeah, I haven't shot as many bullets as you because knives aren't bullets, dude. I shoot them by throwing
You're
them.
A regular Drax.
So I'm looking at this, and it's a three-page long letter. I would like to discourage people from writing three-page long letters.
Well,
but
don't
this,
read them then.
Well, this is a pretty good one.
Okay.
So it goes like
so
this.
So we should settle in, or?
Dear Stuart, Dan, and Elliot, in the order I imagine you standing on an imaginary staircase. After listening to your recent episode on Gangster Squad, I was surprised that you made no mention of the fact that the movie was based, albeit loosely, on a comic book property, especially since your entire podcast seems to reference that comic book and its characters, using catchphrases, animal sidekicks, names, etc. I refer, of course, to the old FC Publications characters, the Peerless Pranking Peaches. I'm attaching a scan of the cover image from issue 32 of the Flopcat Comics title Prankster Squad, one of the many FC titles which featured the Peerless Pranking Peaches, by that time simply known as the original Peaches. Also below is an excerpt from Hal Finkelstein's chapter on the Peaches from his book Floozies, Flopcats, and Fedoras, The Best Forgotten Age of Comics, which is now unfortunately out of print. And it goes, quote, "It was in 1952 that Flopcat Comics editor-in-chief Mort Fliegel decided to team up three of his poorer-selling characters into one team. Duke Wellington, the dapper detective, had been a moderately successful crime strip
Duke Wellington.
Featuring the adventures of a blue-blooded, cravat-wearing sleuth and his trusty feline sidekick, Sir Mittens Mewington III. Laughing boy Stan McCoy, Hoover's happiest G-man, took a more slapstick slant with the lead character who employed an arsenal of gags, jokes, and lighthearted hijinks to capture criminals. And Quentin Elliot Devereaux Kalin, or QED Kalin, Boy Investigator, was a backup feature that even at the time was seen as a cheap Encyclopedia Brown knockoff, despite the fact it predated Encyclopedia Brown by 19 years. In teaming these three characters together, first as the Peerless Pranking Peaches, then after a threatened legal action from Pranking Pete's Perfectly Peerless Peach Soda, a popular soft drink and hair oil of the day, simply as the original Peaches.
A popular soft drink and hair oil?
Hair oil.
Yeah, words. Okay.
Fliegel would give FC
I hadn't interrupted you in a while, so I decided to make fun of you.
Fliegel would give FC Publishing its most successful franchise. Soon the original Peaches were featuring in over 15 Flopcat Comics titles, from the crime-themed Prankster Squad to the horror title Fiendish Tales from the Flophouse of Horribleness.
Horror title? Oh, horror.
Horror.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Use context clues, guys.
Use Conte crayons, guys.
It seemed readers
You're
could,
a
not,
translator now.
Could not get enough of the trio's mix of intrigue, humor, and educational adventure. In his autobiography, That Was Something I Did, Mort Fliegel remembers, in those days, the original Peaches were everywhere. You couldn't pass a street corner or school playground without hearing a group of kids argue over which of them had to pretend to be QED Kalin.
In which of them got to be QED Kalin.
At the height of their popularity, the Peaches would go up against gangster Mickey Cohen, open a house painting business with Frankenstein, fight over starlet
the
Mamie
scientist
Van
or
Doren.
The monster? Wait, what do you say about Mamie Van Doren?
Fight over starlet Mamie Van Doren, and famously sock Fidel Castro in the kisser. But their success could not last. Public taste was changing, and by the early 60s, the current trend was for spandex-clad superheroes. Despite Fliegel's attempt to cash in on the craze by having a magical leprechaun genie named Shazam O'Neal bestow superpowers and outlandish costumes on the trio, it seemed the Peaches' days were numbered. In 1963, Brothwick Rutherford.
Then a day later.
The actor,
then the day after that.
Who portrayed Duke Wellington on the original Peaches Pelican Patrolling and Excitement Hour, shot himself in the head 17 times. And the show was canceled.
Oh, no. And how do you do that?
And the Peaches were explicitly cited in Dr. Herbert Wormstrung's Seduction of the Simple-Minded for leading lifestyles which were, according to Wormstrung, in opposition to all things decent and completely contradictory to wholesome living.
That's fair.
Suddenly, parents were asking if the original Peaches were indeed suitable role models for their impressionable offspring. After all, despite many references to girlfriends, fiancés, and eventually even wives, none ever appeared in the Peaches' many adventures, and the three men always seemed happiest in their own company. By 1969.
I mean, we talk about boobs a lot. I don't know.
The original Peaches were all but forgotten. And only their spinoff character, the reformed jewel thief and feline philanderer, Franklin Leopold Oscar Prentice Cat, better known as the Flop Cat, remained in the public eye thanks to a national advertising campaign for a topical hemorrhoid cream, which used the Flop Cat as a mascot. Although this proved to be a blow
with his tongue
to the character's cult credibility, the original party animal was cited by Robert Crumb as a major inspiration for his character Fritz. Crumb said, "I was originally going to call it Fritz the Dog, and then I saw this ad for hemorrhoid cream." In the late 80s, visionary British comic scribe Adam Moorcock, a self-confessed Peaches fan, penned the 12-part deluxe limited maxi series, How Peels the Peaches, a dark reimagining of the characters, which proved extremely controversial with fans. Wellington, once a suave and cultured man about town, was now a beer and boobs obsessed blue collar everyman. The always upbeat McCoy.
Real Jim Belushi type.
The upbeat McCoy was revealed to suffer from.
I'm looking for a Jim Belushi type.
Crippling depression. His trademark quips and lilting laughs replaced with mournful sighs and nihilistic fatalism. And as for QED Kalen, the boy with a computer brain, traits that once seemed endearing were now simply insufferable. Instead of sharp-witted repository of useful facts and figures, it became a trivia-obsessed bore, constantly quoting obscure data, referencing long-forgotten movies, bursting into song in inopportune moments, and trying the patience of all but the most indulgent of fans. So that was the excerpt.
I mean, people like to listen to us. I don't know. Yeah. It seems...
And that was from Null Brun. Vowels from name withheld.
Well, I have to say that you did a great job with that letter, Dan.
Thanks.
That you wrote.
There was a lot of vocal gymnastics that normally would be a problem for you.
Normally, and I want to say to whoever wrote that letter, that was a very funny letter, but you almost killed Dan.
Mm-hmm.
If he had read that in a normal state, his tongue would have jumped down his esophagus and strangled himself. He would have choked on his own vocal cords.
If I had read that in a normal state, it would be not being surrounded by you two, where I could have done it.
You two is here?
Whoa.
And I still haven't found.
Like
get out of here.
This guy.
Get out of here, Bono.
Over there.
Bono, Edge, other members of the band whose names I don't know, get out of here.
Get out of here, Bono. You put your songs on my phone without me asking for them.
That was bullshit. Let me just tell you that.
That
was like if he slipped $20 into your underpants while you were wearing them, and he was like, "Pretty nice, right? I gave you $20. No, but you put your hand in my underpants."
CDs cost $20
now. That seems like a double.
Thanks, Obama.
Seems like you get two benefits there: $20 and a hand on your pants.
I don't want Bono's hand. No, it's not a good place, though.
Oh, okay. You're talking the butt.
Yep.
Look, leave it up to the listener's imagination. Whatever your part of your bathing suit area you least like having touched by Bono.
So when you stick a hand between somebody's butt cheeks, it's called a wedgie, I think.
Yeah.
No, it's called Bono.
You go flappity, flappity. we established this last time.
I didn't like it then, and I don't like it now. I want to apologize to all the listeners on
pot apologize?
On regards of decency.
I like a good pot apology.
You jumped all over him right
wow,
there.
Wow. Hoist on my own batard.
Pot-tard. So
Dan, are you okay?
I don't know. Now's the point.
You seem to be descending into madness. And I don't mean the good madness, the English ska band.
No. I looked upon something out of a Lovecraft tale, and now...
But you couldn't come up with a specific reference, could you?
No, I couldn't.
Say Necronomicon.
The Dunwich Whore. I don't know.
The Dunwich Whore.
There's some kind of lurker on the doorstep.
I'm done with this witch. Dunwich.
It's about a tan witch. She's dun-colored.
Dun-colored, yeah.
So now's
yeah, I'll take a Dunwich. That's a, it's a sandwich, but it's got a it's a fish man.
Yeah, it's all tentacle based.
That's the Innsmouth look.
All right, so what are we doing? We recommend a movie that we actually liked in opposition to the movie that we watched.
Wait, here
tonight.
On the podcast?
Yeah, that's
we recommend a movie we liked.
Yeah, this is the recommendation segment.
Do we
of the
like
podcast.
Movies?
Sometimes
we love that.
Elliot, why don't you?
Don't we hate
something?
Movies? Just like the title of our podcast?
No, that's a different podcast.
Oh, how did this get made?
Well, hold on.
The Dissolve Podcast? Slate Culture Crabs? Hey. What's their
hey guys,
podcast called?
Yeah, WTF. Slate Culture Crab Festival.
So I thought it was, yeah, WTF dudes.
Hey, who charted?
Hey, welcome to Night Vale, you know? Am I right?
Yep.
Doug
yeah,
loves
dude.
Movies.
Keith and the girl?
And my brother, your brother and him.
Well, that's not.
Wait,
it's
what?
A long podcast that's on our network.
Well, I mean, we're not talking.
Like, oh, sorry.
Not
I didn't mean to
ill of tar, other podcasts.
Didn't mean to step on anyone's
let's
toes.
Tar other podcasts.
We're not tarring anything. We're just
we're
naming
just
podcasts.
Mentioning things. We're naming things and making them doing make 'em ups.
Mm-hmm. List, so list some this is listicles.
Dan's got yeah. We're doing
we're
a
doing
an
some
audio.
Buzz,
it's an
BuzzFeed
audio listicle. We're buzzing. We're buzzing and we're feeding. You're on the Buzz House.
Okay, let we can still salvage this podcast.
I don't think
let's
so.
Just talk about our...
Let's give
it a clean
sure.
edit, Mark, and here. So I'll start. Here's a movie I like that I saw recently. It's a movie called The Plumber, and it's a movie that Peter Weir made for Australian television.
Christopher Plumber.
Yeah, it's the story of Christopher Plumber and is how he started as a plumber. No.
I was actually talking about Peter Weir movies yesterday, and I didn't realize he directed Picnic at Hanging Rock.
Yeah, yeah.
That's one of his
that's my favorite of his.
Top films.
And Master and Commander?
Yeah. He's
and other shit.
Directed many, I mean, directed those roughly 35 years apart.
And Master at Hanging Rock and
Picnic at Commander.
He's
Commander's
really
Picnic
long,
at the Edge of the World.
He's had a really long career, but you don't, I don't know. You don't yeah.
He's not someone you think of as like, like, oh, the new Peter Weir movie is out.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's been making movies consistently for many years. But this is one he made after
Green Card. He directed Green Card, right?
I think he did, yeah.
That's a weird one.
Yeah,
for
the
him.
Movie that introduced Gerard Depardieu to America so that he could become our father, the hero, and eventually Bogus. It was sad when America realized that Gerard Depardieu was bogus. Totally bogus, in fact.
Yep. And they said, and like Frankenstein's monster from Monster Squad, they said, bogus, and
yep.
threw him away.
And they said, they kicked him in the nuts and said, Gerard Depardieu has nads? Just like in Monster
he's
Squad.
Wine soaked pouch between his legs.
It's too descriptive.
That's where he keeps his wine.
Too descriptive.
His scrotum.
It's a wineskin, yeah. Oh, man. Of course, his name means Gerard of Pardieu. Now,
Pardieu.
So the movie is called The Plumber. It's a movie that Peter Weir made after Picnic at Hanging Rock for Australian television. And the thing about it is it's ostensibly a thriller. This couple, one is a this guy is a professor at an Australian college in Sydney, I think. And his wife is an anthropology grad student who's working on her master's. Maybe it's a doctorate. And one day, this guy who says he's the plumber for their university housing comes in and he's like, oh, you've got a problem in the bathroom. I got to go in there and fix it. And the wife is like, we never called you. I didn't call the plumber. He goes, you got a big problem. This place is going to flood. It's these old buildings. And the plumber is this very talkative, very overbearing blue-collar guy who wears on his sleeve that he hates elites, hates intellectuals. He considers himself like a folk singer, man of the people. And there's something very creepy and overbearing about him. And without him ever doing too much that's openly threatening, you get this very creepy vibe from him, and so does the wife. And nobody will listen to her that this guy is dangerous as he continues to come in every day, screw up their bathroom more and more, and kind of impose himself on her life more and more until she's forced to do what she can to get him out of her life. And it's one of these movies where, like, looking back on it, there's no scenes that are like scare scenes, but there's this level of thriller paranoia that lasts throughout the whole thing that Peter Weir does. And it's almost like if he said, I'm going to take a similar feel to Picnic at Hanging Rock, and I'm going to make a sitcom about a woman and a crazy plumber, but I'm going to treat it like it's this like suspense thriller with an almost eerie overtone to it. And I really liked it a lot. So, The Plumber. directed by Peter Weir, and starring a number of Australian soap opera actors of the time.
Natalie Imbruglia?
Nope. That is the one Australian soap opera actor. Yeah, this is not
Keith Ledger?
One of those Hemsworths?
They're on soap operas too, and Thor.
I feel like there's the one that no one talks about. There's like the third one no one talks about. I feel like it's a soap opera guy.
They have a sister that's going to be female Thor, right?
Yeah, well, Lady Thor.
Yeah, wait, Thor. Her name is Lady yeah. Lady she, Thor.
She's the low Thor of the Thor people.
She Thor.
Okay.
So the plumber.
So I'm going to recommend a movie that needs no recommendation.
So don't recommend it.
But it's a movie that I rewatched recently. Eraserhead. It's about a guy who has a baby.
That's pretty much what it's about, yeah.
It's a bunch of yucks.
And
when you describe, really, Eraserhead and Three Men and a Baby have the same synopsis. A man who's unprepared to take care of a child has a baby.
There's a ghost in the background of Eraserhead?
You didn't notice? There's a ton of weird shit flying around in the back of that movie.
Yeah,
there's the angel with the big cheeks and the radiator who sings that weird song.
Yeah,
and then the sperm fall on her and she's stomping on him with her high-heeled shoes.
Yeah,
it's a weird dream of a movie that is both unpleasant and
unforgettable,
sort of hilarious in another way.
Oh, it's really funny, but it's scary and gross.
So, if you want to have a real nightmare of an experience, watch Eraserhead. And the most recent Criterion DVD release has a bunch of short David Lynch films. I have not been able to watch all of them yet, mostly because The Granny is like half an hour long, which to me is pretty long for a short film.
Whoa, The Granny?
But or The Grandmother, I think it's.
That's
I've
the length
the
of
ones.
A television show.
I know, I just haven't had time.
How many half-hour shows
I've
do you
watched
watch?
I was watching it on the same. I was trying to watch it on the same night I watched Eraserhead, so I didn't. I could not get.
Well,
to
that's
it
a fool's errand.
But I did watch The Alphabet was a great 5-minute short that's creepy and inexplicable.
It's also a great way to form words.
Yeah.
You know, for communication, whether speaking or writing.
Yeah. And
The Alphabet, try it today.
For math, I recommend Numbers.
Oh, yeah, you can't go wrong. That's your top choice
You're
for math.
You're recommending the TV show Numbers?
Num-3-ers.
Yep.
You're recommending
Rob Morrow.
Murder by Numbers. With Sandra Bullock.
or just the police song, Murder by Numbers.
Yeah, sure.
That it was based on.
It's weird that police department decided to release an album. But I guess after Ferguson, they had to do something to get their popularity back.
So erase her head.
Okay.
Erase her head?
Yes.
What's she going to eat with?
This is my secret message to kill somebody. Erase her head. You know what I'm talking about. Barry, wink, wink.
Barry, wink, wink.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna. I haven't even started.
Famous baby Barry, wink, wink. One of the top babies in the country. But anyway, you were saying, Stuart, you had a movie to recommend.
So I'm gonna recommend a movie. I'm gonna recommend a movie called Witching and Bitching. I think that's the English title. The Spanish title is. I believe Las Brujas de Zaguramurdi. I'm gonna fuck this shit up.
You already did.
So this is the most recent movie by Spanish director Alex de la Iglesia.
Of the Glacier.
Yep. I've seen a couple of this guy's movies, but I'm not a big crazy fan. He's one of the Spanish directors from the same school as. Iñárritu and Cuarón and my brain is totally falling.
So long takes.
But he's made a lot of movies. He made his early.
He got
a fair amount of notoriety for movies. His debut, Acción Mutante, and The Day of the Beast, and then kind of more recently, I saw 800 Bullets, which was quite good. And his movies are, Witching and Bitching is similar to a lot of his movies in that it manages to balance the intended tone of the movie, in this case, kind of like a horror movie, with a lot of silliness. The plot is a couple of desperate guys, steal jewelry from a pawn shop, and in their escape attempt, they end up in a famous witch town in Spain near the border of France. And, of course, they run afoul of a coven of cannibal witches. And they there's some obvious horror beats that come up, and they get wrapped up in this big and the detectives that are following them get wrapped up in a big ritual to find some chosen one. But it manages to be a fairly effective horror comedy, and it the conclusion ends up running a little bit long, and not every single beat hits, but it manages to be charming enough that it works. And of course, like a lot of his other movies, it manages to feature a conclusion where both like the villains have lost and the good guys have won, but they're all kind of happy at the end. And it has a very jovial tone. So yeah, check it out.
All right,
you guys didn't interrupt me at all.
We were both riveted. We're both riveted by it.
Riveted with exhaustion.
That too, and very tired. And yet somehow I seem to find energy to interrupt Dan. I don't know what it is. Yeah.
It's weird. It's like, you know, when, like if a car was on your child, you'd have the strength to lift it up.
That boy is a treasure and a joy. Are you threatening him?
What, like the tire is on him or like
just any part of the car?
It's crushing him?
No.
Okay. Like it's just kind of touching him?
Yeah.
If he's in a car.
Crawled under the car, maybe.
Oh, well, then I'll just go get him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a baby's day out.
Classic.
Pretty boring day.
Officers, we got a classic baby's day out scenario. There's a baby on the loose. He's causing hijinks, almost getting hurt, but then not.
Yeah. He's like a real Mr. Magoo of babies.
I said I'd never deal with something like this since the Jungle to Jungle scandal.
All right. Well, thank you for listening yet again. Who knows why you keep tuning in, but we appreciate it.
I certainly don't.
For the Flophouse.
300, Rise of Empire.
Rise of an Empire.
Rise of the Empire.
Rise of an Empire. Dun,
dun, dun, the Empire dun, dun, Strikes dun, dun. Back. I've been Dan McCoy.
I am Stuart Wellington.
And I will always be Elliot Kalin, to my eternal shame.
Never forget it.
Good night, everyone.
Hi and Lois. Hi and Lois.
Hi and Lois. Oh, yeah, Trixie is sitting in the sunbeam. Hi and Lois.
Because people wanted to know what's Beetle Bailey's sister up to.
Oh, I forgot that was a spinoff.
Yeah.
Wait, which one?
Hi and Lois.
Is no, but which Beetle one Bailey. Was Beetle Bailey's sister?
Lois.
Lois, okay. Yeah. Is Hi a person?
Hi is the husband.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's like short for Highland or something.
Is there a Hi and Lois where they get a letter about Beetle Bailey being killed in the war?
I mean,
yes, there is.
He's still alive.
Wait, Bailey, he's still alive?
Beetle Bailey serves at Camp Swampy, which is back on American soil.
No. No, all those stories are from before he shipped off and died.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought he got killed from friendly fire in Camp Swampy.
No.
Because he couldn't peel potatoes fast enough.
Because he was
Sarge
too busy.
Shot him.
The general half-track was too busy chasing Miss Buxley around a desk, and his gun went off and shot Beetle Bailey through a window.
Sarge shot him for insubordination.
It was actually Sarge's dog who did it.
He was killed for treason.
He was stealing secrets for the Chinese. Actually, much like Jacob's Ladder, all the Beetle Bailey comic strip is happening in Beetle Bailey's mind in the moment he's killed.
It's like an incident on Owl Creek Bridge.
Exactly, yeah.